Good morning. It's good to be with you. I've never been here before. I don't know if I've ever even been to Lawrenceville before. I've been in Atlanta since May of last year, and I know it's not that far, but I don't know, something about coming from Atlanta. I'm sure you feel the same way going into the city. It's just something about it. Just it seems like it's too far. I'd rather just stay at home sometimes. So I'm glad I'm able to be with you. It's unfortunate for me to, I guess, the circumstances, because I was really hoping to be with my grandparents. I know they were wanting to be with you, and any time I get to spend with them is a blessing. But I'm the relief pitcher. I got the call yesterday. I guess I have my granddad to thank for that. This might have just been a big plan of his, just to get me to come and preach the whole time. I don't know. But I talked to him this morning. He's feeling a little bit better. And he was just nervous about getting people sick and things like that. So I'm sure that you appreciate that as well. No one needs any more sickness to go around. But so it's good for me to be with you, although I do wish that my grandparents were able to be here. If you want to go ahead and open your Bibles, turn to Exodus. We're going to spend a little bit of time in Exodus. And what I want to talk to you about is the law, I guess. I want to talk to you about the law, but I want to come at it from a different angle. I don't want to just go through the law and what it is and what the laws are, but in Exodus chapter 20, we'll start there. We will read verses 2 through 17, and I want you to act like you are about to do laundry. And I know that might sound odd, and maybe some of you have never done laundry, I don't know. But approach this passage that way, where it's time for you to divide things up, okay? Now, personally, I don't really do a good job of that because I'm lazy and I don't really care about colors and whites, things like that. You know, I'm just going to put it all in there and see what happens. And nothing's ever turned pink on me. Nothing's ever gotten super faded. So it's been successful. So I haven't worried about it. But I understand the concept. My mom taught me how to do laundry the right way. I just don't do it. But approach it that way, that you're going to look at the law and you're going to look at the commandments from God here and you're going to divide them up. And I want you to think about the different categories you might put them in. And then I want to kind of get our minds going in that direction. That way, when hopefully maybe some of you think the same way I do, and if not, that's okay. But what I want to do is I want to separate them in just a little bit. Let's go ahead and read Exodus chapter 20, beginning in verse 2. God says, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water underneath the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and the fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey or anything that is your neighbor's. So what categories did you find that you could divide these commandments into? I'll tell you one that I saw, and it's not the one that we're going to talk about, but it's one that I did notice. There seems to be a difference in some are directly related to God. Like this is how you act, treat, respect, worship, honor God. And then there's the others, like your father and mother, your neighbor, things like that. Even your servants. It doesn't get into some of the details of that. And just for the record, there are many other commandments of God in the Old Testament, specifically in Exodus. And then as we go on throughout the Old Testament, there's so many other commandments, and you could kind of divide them up in that way, that there are some that are directly towards God, and there's some that are directly towards, we'll just say, the others, whether it be parents, children, whether it be neighbor, whether it be enemy, stranger, anything like that. The way I want to categorize these this morning is there's some do's and there's some don'ts. And I want to talk about balancing out the do's and don'ts. Because if you notice, some of them have a very negative tone. Do not do this. You shall not do this. Or I guess if you're going to bring out the Old Testament and really go to the King James, thou shalt not, right? There's the thou shalt nots and there's the thou shalts, if you will. I think when I was younger, and I'm sure that for some of you, or for a lot of you, this would be the case as well. I remember hearing a lot, and I didn't know what it meant at all, but I remember hearing a lot about there's two different types of sins. There's the sin of omission, and there's the sin of commission. There's when you break the law by doing something that it says not to do, and there's when you break the law by not doing something it says to do. So what was their problem? If you think about the Jews, think about the children of Israel, what does it seem like they struggle with most? Obviously, it was the whole law, and the New Testament really brings that out, that if you fall short in one aspect, you fall short in the whole law. And really what Jesus gets into in the New Testament is the fact that their hearts were wrong anyway, so it wasn't just one law or one aspect of the law or one type of commandment. It was their heart, which means that the whole law was wrong. But if you do think back to the things that seemed like that they did and the things they didn't do, it does seem like they were pretty bad about honoring God and about the do nots. Like, don't have a carved image before me, right? Don't have another God before me. Which obviously then goes back to, did they really love God, which was one of the do's. So I say that just to illustrate that really they fell short in the whole law. But I want to get into this in a second. But just to point it out, and I guess just to list the things that I see as being the do's. Remember the Sabbath. That's a do. Do that. They seem pretty good about that. Now, they might have missed the heart of it. They might have missed the purpose of it. But they got onto Jesus at one point. They said, why are your servants out there plucking grain? Why are they working? And they get on him for his disciples doing something and even him healing people. And he says, don't you remember David and his servants, right? So what does the Sabbath really mean? What is the purpose is his point. But they were good about saying, whoa, 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 don't you work on the Sabbath. That's a commandment from God. And really honor your father and mother. That would be another do. And I guess they seem to do okay with that, although there is one passage where they come to Jesus and it seems like their whole attitude on that is wrong. So Jesus has to correct them even on honoring their father and mother. But at least on the surface level, it seems like they have the do's. Now the do nots, that's another story. Now, let me illustrate it this way. Think of a law that you find very hard to keep. Just not a law as in a commandment from God, but a law in this country, a law of the land. Speeding, right? I mean, that's one for me. And I think it's because I don't remember, except for my parents, I don't remember someone saying, it's written here, do not speed. I just remember seeing signs, this is the speed limit. So that's a do. Do this. Abide by this. This is your range. Stay in that range. And I don't want to do that. And there's a little wiggle room there, right? I mean, because I was told by someone else that if you go 7 over, it's okay. That 8 mile an hour, that's when you're going to get caught. But then I think of some other things like don't drive with an expired license. Okay, I'm not going to do that, all right? I'm not going to, maybe some of you have and it was an accident, whatever. I'm not judging you on that. I'm just saying that's something for me, that's a no-no. Like, I'm not going to get caught doing that. And there's other things in our laws that are do-nots that I definitely don't want to be accused of, but the do's are harder for me because I can excuse them. I can justify them. I think there's a little bit of way of wiggle room there. I think they were the exact opposite. I think they struggled with the do nots and they felt like they had the do's down, even though they missed the heart of it most of the time. To illustrate that, I want to go to Deuteronomy 31. Deuteronomy 31. Moses' life is coming to an end. And Joshua is going to succeed him. He's going to be their leader. And what I want you to notice is, beginning in verse number 16, the Lord speaks to Moses and he says, "Behold, you are about to lie down with your fathers. Then this people will rise and whore after the foreign gods among them in the land that they are entering. They will forsake me and break my covenant that I made with them. Then my anger will be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them and hide my face from them, and they will be devoured. And many evils and troubles will come upon them, so that they will say in that day, 'Have not these evils come upon us because our God is not among us?'" What were they focusing on? If they were having these evils and these troubles come upon them, they were looking around and saying, "Where is God?" And their problem was they had gone after other gods. They had gone after carved images. They had gone after foreign gods of the people of the land around them. And they kind of even made gods for themselves. It wasn't just the other people's fault. It wasn't just, oh, well, it was all those other nations, right? Do you remember what happened when Moses went up on the mount? They very quickly had another god before them. They had the golden calf. So you can't just blame it on all these other people and all these other nations around them. They struggled with the do nots. Do not take a foreign god. Do not have a carved image before me. All of that was in response to God's actual first commandment: love me with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. So in some way, they even broke that one by doing this. And if you wanted to go on, you could read this pretty much through the end of the chapter, specifically down through verse 28. And you could see that what's going to happen is they're going to leave God. And God is trying to impress upon Moses that this is going to happen. You need to warn them. You need to tell them what's coming. And really, Joshua, you need to be a leader, and you need to step up, and you need to tell them what they need to do. You need to tell them not to do this, because it is going to be difficult for them. They're going to have evils and troubles among them, and it's going to be because of their acts, because they're forsaking me. But it does seem like they struggled with turning to other gods, making carved images. Even think of one of the examples in the Old Testament of what maybe we would think is like, well, I mean, wasn't there a little leeway there? Do you remember when Uzzah touched the ark? What was the commandment? Don't touch the ark, right? Even something like that. It was the do nots that really seemed to trip them up, or at least that's what showed their heart was wrong in the first place. Like I said, I want to emphasize that truthfully they struggled with all of the law. It just seems like they were more fervent and more ready to follow the do's, and there were more excuses for the do nots. And this led to future problems. Let's go over to Luke 11. We'll talk about ourselves here in just a little bit, but I want to continue looking at the children of Israel, the Jews, and just kind of see the things that they struggled with. And so as we go to Luke 11, I want you to think back to your knowledge of what these Pharisees and these other people that knew the law, that were proclaimed followers of the law, what did they come to Jesus asking? What kinds of things did they try to trip him up in? So if you go to verse number 37, of Luke 11. While Jesus was speaking, a Pharisee asked him to dine with him. So he went in and reclined at the table. The Pharisee was astonished to see that he did not first wash before dinner. Now, I might find that to be a little bit gross, but I'm not going to be astonished if someone eats before dinner. Don't touch my food, is what I'd be thinking. But for them, this was a hey, you don't do this. You better follow this commandment. You better keep the law, right? Don't touch anything that's unclean. So then Jesus responds to him, and he says, "Now you Pharisees," verse 39, "cleanse the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness. You fools, did not he who made the outside make the inside also? But give as alms those things that are within, and behold, everything is clean for you. But woe to you Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and every herb, and neglect justice and the love of God, and the love of God. These you ought to have done without neglecting the others. Woe to you Pharisees, for you love the best seat in the synagogues and greetings in the marketplaces. Woe to you, for you are like unmarked graves, and people walk all over them without knowing it." We'll stop there, but I do want to just point out that as they go on, you see what this lawyer says? He says, "Teacher, in these things you're insulting us. You know, you're offending us by what you're saying. They needed to be offended and insulted, because what they were doing was insulting and offending God by thinking we are keeping the commandments, but neglecting so many, and really not even keeping them in totality like they ought to, because their heart was wrong. Jesus' point here is that you're cleansing the outside. You're worried about washing things. You're worried about making sure everything's clean. But inside, you're dirty. There's another passage where he would say that you're like whitewashed tombs. You're full of dead man's bones. And I can't help but wonder if, at times, if Jesus would say the same thing to me, except for different reasons. Because for me, it's the do nots that seem to come easy. Don't get drunk. Don't commit adultery. Don't lie. Don't steal. Don't be greedy. Those kinds of things that, well, maybe greedy is a little bit difficult at times. But most of the things in the New Testament that would be there, they can seem to be kind of easy to at least jointly say, yes, we will be behind that. We're going to keep that law. We might slip in them from time to time, but we can all agree that, like, those are things that we need to make sure we're not doing. But what about the do's? I would say that the do's seem to come more difficult. If you go back to Matthew and you look at, as Jesus is standing and he has, I guess, the longest sermon that we have recorded from him, Matthew 5 through 7, you just look through that and you see the things that are the do nots. And you just notice how it seems like those are kind of easy. Don't swear by heaven and of don't swear by heaven and of earth. Okay, don't swear. Don't take oaths that you can't keep. Okay, all right, not a problem there. I might have a moment where I mess up with that, but I can understand that. Don't judge. Well, I don't want to judge because in a certain way, because I know that then I will be judged accordingly. So don't judge, and we can kind of get behind a lot of those things. Don't let your deeds be known. In Matthew 6, he's talking about their righteousness. So don't, like, shout a trumpet. Don't shout it out. Don't make sure everyone knows how charitable you are or how prayerful you are or how much you fast. Don't do that. Don't seek revenge. Don't steal, lie, or speak evil. That's from Ephesians 4. What about the do's? Let's go over to 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. First Thessalonians chapter 5, let's begin in verse 16. And I'll just tell you that some of these, maybe for a lot of you, it seems easy, but for me, most of these seem very difficult. Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. Do not quench the Spirit. I don't know for sure what that means, so I think I'm okay there. I don't have to worry about don't quench the Spirit, right? Because we say the Spirit is the Word, so I'm not going to get in the way of that, and I'm not going to quench it. I'm going to, you know, make sure that I don't come in the way of someone else understanding it. Do not despise prophecies. I wouldn't dare do that. I wouldn't dare despise the Word of God, a message from God. But test everything. Hold fast what is good. Abstain from every form of evil. Even within these few verses, personally, I find the ones that are don't do this, I find those to be the easiest ones. Rejoice always. I'm a happy person. I like to be positive, not all the time, but I mean, I try. But rejoice always, that's not always so easy. Because life happens. Because disappointments arise. Because I have hopes that don't seem to be fulfilled. I have dreams that get squashed. I have all these things that happen, and I have people that are hurting that I love, and you want me to rejoice in all of that? How about pray without ceasing? Well, sometimes I don't have, there's moments I don't feel like I have enough time. There's oftentimes I don't know exactly what to say. I can pray before a meal, though. But pray without ceasing, that's tough. Give thanks in all circumstances. Goes back to rejoicing always. That's not so easy. And then as you go down, test everything. Hold fast what is good. Sometimes when you test everything and you hold fast to what is good, you wind up coming off as the one that's trying to divide. So that's not so easy, but you need to do it. And then the last one, abstain from every form of evil. Some might say, well, I mean, what isn't a form? What doesn't look like evil at times? So what does that really mean? You see how it can be easy to come up with excuses and ways to kind of get around the commandments of God. And these are just a few of them. These are some do's that I personally would say is a struggle at times. Let me bring up a few more. How about back in Matthew, where Jesus told those disciples to go into all the world and to teach, to basically bring people to me. Your disciples, go make more disciples. I could justify that and say, well, that was for them, right? And now it's gone out into the whole world. I mean, look, we're halfway across the world from where that was, and so what is there left for me to do? Or I could explain it and I can kind of justify it by saying, I'm teaching by my example, which is, I'm not saying that's wrong, that is true, but how did Jesus teach? He taught by his example. He taught by how he lived. He taught by word as well, didn't he? I can't get away and skirt around the issue of teaching someone, sitting down with the Bible open and saying, let's talk about the gospel. Let's talk about Jesus. What do you think of Christ? What is your concept of God? What do you believe about the Bible? And just having those discussions and teaching people, that's hard. And I realize that, and I'm not the best at that. I hope I'm not the worst at that, but taking those opportunities to do that, and then to have the patience and the care and the knowledge that you need to have in order to walk through the scripture with someone, that can be difficult. So I can justify that, not justify not doing that at times. How about love your enemy? You find that easy to do? Well, no, because they're your enemy. If it was just love the person that loves you, love the person that, you know, you give me $1,000, well, I'm going to love you, okay? I mean, I'm going to love you, you know? You give me good things, I love you. Someone who shows care for me, I care for them. But someone that shows some sort of like vengeance against me, they have some sort of like just anger towards me, they mistreat me. Well, that's tough. It's tough to love that person. Now, I might justify that by saying, well, I don't hate them. I just don't like them. But do I love them? Do I have that care where I will forgive them, where I care for their soul, where I'm really going to pray for them? I'm going to have mercy on them. And what about another do that we find in Matthew 5, which is give to the one that asks? And basically that's what he says in Matthew 5:42. We need to be giving of ourselves, giving to the ones that are in need. I can justify that and I can get around that as well. Because I don't know what they're going to use that on. I don't know. I mean, maybe they're trying to scam me. You know, they should. You know, what they need to do is they need to go work. And I'm not saying that all those things aren't thoughts or that they're wrong thoughts. I'm just issuing a warning to you. Don't let those be excuses or ways that you justify skirting around the commandments of God. Because I think that's what the people in Israel did one day. They started thinking, well, you know, we don't even know where Moses is. So who knows? He could be dead up there on that mountain. And we need to do something for these people. Because these people, we just came from the land of Egypt. It's like an unknown land. Where are we? Where are we going? What's happening here? We need something to rally around. Aaron, why don't you build us something? Why don't you make us something? That's a great idea. It's for the good of the people that we do this. For the morale. Let's get everybody excited. Let's make sure that everybody's together still. So they built a calf. And that wasn't okay. Just because it seemed to be justified, which I know that it sounds ridiculous on our end, but if you put yourself in their shoes, you could try to justify some of those things. Or how about some commandments about don't marry with these nations and these people, okay? How about the commandment of actually, like, cast these nations out. Get them out of here. Cleanse from your land all the people that are there. Yeah, but they have a lot to offer. And do you really want to be known as someone that goes and wipes everyone out? You got to show mercy a little bit, right? No. God's commandment was what it was, and they should have followed it. And it's the same for us. So what I've wanted to do so far in this lesson, and I just have a few more passages, or really just two more passages I want to go to. What I really wanted to do is I want to bring out and point out the fact that there are categories that we unintentionally at times put God's commandments into. And maybe it's different from individual to individual, but on a whole, it does seem to me that there are certain commandments and certain types of commandments that we would struggle with more than others. Maybe it's the culture and environment that we've been raised in. I don't know what it is. But they had certain ones that they struggled with. And I think we do too. And what I want to point out is that not only do we need to work on that, but I want you to understand that just like those people back in, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, that when they fell short in one aspect, it showed their heart, and so they fell short in all of them. It's the same with us. If you struggle to keep the commandments of God, and it's not just I slipped up or I have this thing that I actually do struggle with and you are working on, if you continually struggle with it and you justify it, you work around it, you try to figure out, you have a heart issue. I have a heart issue when that happens. So what commandments do you struggle with? I don't mean what commandments do you struggle with as in you have temptations in those things. I mean, which ones do you struggle with actually believing that I need to keep this? Well, don't justify it. Don't be like them. Don't be like the Pharisees, okay? Because you can cleanse the outside, but inside you could be dirty. You could be disgusting, full of filth. And really, you're a sinner. So while everyone around you might think that, okay, look what I'm not doing. I am cleansed, obviously. Everyone could think of you as that way, but that doesn't mean that that's how God sees you. And I can think of times in my life where I know that's true. Because I grew up, I mean, many of you know or at least are familiar with my grandparents because they were here. I don't know how long ago it was. It was before my time, I'll say that. They were here at one point. And I think he might have come back at times. I was raised in that environment. And I was raised around them. And I was raised around godly people for a majority of my young childhood. So as I grew up and I wasn't doing anything that was bad, I mean, because I was scared and none of my friends were, so I was lucky in that way, I feel like. And I did have a pretty tender heart and heavy conscience, and you didn't have to do much to make me cry about something that I did wrong. You know, you could just give me a look and, well, there's, I mean, you don't have to spank me because I'm already in tears, you know. That was me as a kid. So as I grew up, like, everyone thought that I was okay, I was good. But inside, I know who I was. And it took a little time for me to realize I'm not doing anything that actually shows that I'm a follower of God. I'm just not doing things that show that I'm a sinner. Does that make sense? That was me. And maybe some of you could find yourself in that situation as well. And I'd already been baptized at that point. I'd already been a Christian for several years. But there I was realizing I think I'm a terrible excuse for a Christian. Because sure, I don't do some things, I don't do a lot of things, or I don't do most of the things that God says don't do, but my heart's not right. So therefore, I'm not doing the things that God has encouraged and commanded me to do. Even think about assembling. You know, we act like the commandment is go to church. But whenever you want to talk about that, you always go to Hebrews 10, right? What's the actual teaching there? Do not forsake the assembling of yourselves together. It's another do not. That's easy. That's easy for me. Okay, I'll be there. Tell me the time. Maybe I'll be a few minutes late, but I'll be there, right? So that everyone knows I'm here. And no one can accuse me of missing that. No one can accuse me of other things that they see me do out in the world. But no one could validate and say, Blake is a follower of Christ. He is doing all the things that God has told him to. He is shining his light. He is a servant. He is giving. No one could have done that either. So maybe you find yourself in that situation. Well, I want to go over to Romans 13. Just to prove this point just a little bit more. Romans 13, and we'll read verses 8 through 14. Romans 13, beginning in verse 8. Owe no one anything except to love each other. For the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment are summed up in this word. you shall love your neighbor as yourself. How does that? I mean, wrap your mind around that. All these commandments about don't do these things can be summed up in this one commandment. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. Besides this, you know the time, that the hour has come for you to wake from sleep. For salvation is nearer to us now than when we first believed. The night is far gone. The day is at hand. So then let us cast off the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us walk properly as in the daytime, not in orgies and drunkenness, not in sexual immorality and sensuality, not in quarreling and jealousy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to gratify its desires. So what Paul says there is that you could sum up the law. You could sum up those things about you should not do all those things. You could sum that up in one law, one commandment. Love your neighbor as yourself. And then all these things about how it's hard for us to live, and you know, sometimes we fall short and we slip up in whatever the other sins and the works of darkness, as verse 12 says. You know what he actually comes back and he says to do then? Put on Jesus. So maybe those are two things I could just emphasize as we draw this to a close. When it comes to living your life, if you do these two things, and really this goes back to Jesus when he actually reveals what is the greatest commandment, right? We need to love God. And I would say part of that is putting on Jesus. And we need to make sure we love our neighbor as ourselves. When I do those things, I don't have to worry about the do nots. Because I'm clear of them. Because I'm loving God. So I'm adhering to his word. I'm not putting other things before him. If I love my neighbor and I love others around me as I ought to, in its proper context, if I love them the way God has told me to, you know what? I'm not going to cheat them. I'm not going to steal. I'm not going to lie to them or deceive them. I'm not going to do anything that would harm them. But it's hard for us to think that way at times. And I think it's because we want to justify it. We want to work around it. And really, we just don't feel like doing it sometimes. The last passage I want to read is in Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12, and then we'll conclude the lesson. Mark 12, 29 and 30. So one of the scribes comes up and he asks him a question. This is different than the other time when someone asked him, what's the greatest commandment? This is similar though, but I think it is a different, it might be a different occurrence. Which commandment is the most important of all? Jesus answered, the most important is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. If I view God the way I ought to, God is one. His commandment, his law is one. And I shouldn't try to divide it. I shouldn't try to be focused on keeping certain things and just justify and say, well, the other things are just harder, they're not as important, or whatever it might be. And what I also need to understand is I need to love God. And that if I have that in my heart, and if I live based on that, hey, all these do's and do nots, they take care of themselves. So what I would encourage all of us to do this morning, and really maybe this is something just for us to do in the coming days, is to examine our lives. Really kind of put yourself to the test. Do you love God? Do you love God in the way that he says you ought to love him? Or do you love God the way that maybe those children of Israel did? Or they loved him in certain ways, but in other ways they didn't show love towards him. And do you love your neighbor as yourself? Or do you just love like your neighbor next door as yourself because they borrow your blow dryer, they borrow your lawnmower, and hey, that's love, right? We share. What about the person that's your enemy, about the person that's around you that doesn't show love? You love them. All of that cleanses the heart. And another passage that we could have read would show us that out of the heart flow all the things that we do. I believe it's in Proverbs that out of the heart flow the springs of life. The issues of life. The way you live your life is determined by your heart. So get your heart right. I think that's really my message for you today. It's ironic that the song we're going to sing is asking a question, is thy heart right with God? I think that's a very valid question. It's not just something for somebody else here that you know that really needs God in their life. It's not just for them. This is for each and every one of us. Is our heart right? How are you doing at balancing out the do's and don'ts of the law? If you do have something that you need to confess, if you have a need and you need the prayers, the help of this congregation, I'm sure that they would love to hear from you. They would love to pray with you. If you are not a Christian, the call from God that has gone out since Jesus came is follow me. Come to him, whether you're heavy laden, burdened, or whatever, and he'll give you rest. And if you need that this morning, we'd love to help you with that. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?